Many years ago, as a freshman college student, I was stuck in a Friday afternoon chemistry lab. I had very little idea what I was supposed to be doing there. When we made up this mixture, it was like creamed soup. It was yellow. We put it into a portion. Then we put it on top of one of those little Bunsen burners that was hooked up to the gas spigot, and we lit a fire under the porcelain dish. And once in a while we'd stir it, and I could see that the porcelain dish was getting hotter and hotter. But except for a few bubbles coming up, nothing was really happening. Some steam would rise, but nothing was happening. I was bored. I kept watching the mixture, but I didn't even know what I was supposed to be looking for. And then something happened. In less than 20 seconds, the mixture completely changed its nature. The mixture, in a matter of seconds, went from that soup to a solid. It went from that opaque, milky liquid to a clear, glass-like crystal. What I had observed was the process of crystallization. Now, in a chemistry sense, I still don't know what they were trying to teach me back then. But as a Christian, I have always remembered that. Stirring that thick, creamy, soup-like mixture. And then, in a matter of seconds, it became clear. If you are seriously interested in becoming one of the 144,000, you have one major developmental responsibility. And that is to transform your character. Romans 12:2. Be transformed by the renewing of your minds. If you expect to stand before the Lord and someday say, "Lord, I did great things in your name," it's not going to be enough. If you have the same character that you have now, it's not going to be enough. What God is looking for in you is a new character. First, we better define, or try to define, character. Is it your makeup? And is it your personality? Not quite. Is it your traits, your features, your attributes, your abilities? Now, the first thing we realize when we start to talk about character is it's not what's on the outside. Character has something to do with what's in deep inside you. Somebody once said, "You know, down deep, I'm pretty superficial." Now, that person didn't have much character. Because character is not superficial. Character is not polish. Character is not veneer. Character is not manners. It's not education. It's not a facade. It's not even your personality. Character has a lot to do with righteousness. Has a lot to do with integrity, has a lot to do with ethics. You know, that's kind of an academic definition. Let me try some more behavioral definitions. And I kind of made these up. Character is who you are when nobody's watching you. Do you do things different when you know nobody's watching you? I do some things when I know nobody's watching me. Do you say anything different when you know nobody's listening? You're starting to get an insight into your character based on the things you do when no one else is around. You don't have much character if you say you're a conscientious objector. And then when the recruiters come by, you join the army. You don't have much character when you say one thing to a person, and when they're gone, you say something else about them. You don't have much character if you do that. If you tell Jehovah that you're going to do something, and you do something else, you don't have much character. I think character, the best I can sum it, and we're going to get into sub-features through the scriptures, is that character is that set of internal values or qualities that determines your behavior. Character determines what you buy and sell. Character determines what you say. Character determines what you sacrifice. Character determines how you respond to every situation. Character determines what your personal passions are. Character determines what your level of integrity is. Emerson said, character is like an acrostic. You can read it forward, you can read it backwards, you can read it across, it still spells the same thing. Now, you probably haven't brought to mind a lot of scriptures that use the word character. And there's a reason for that. In the English language, the word character did not come into usage until the 14th century. So it wasn't in the language. But it is in the Greek. And I have a couple examples for you. One is the Greek word arete. And this is in Philippians 4:8. And the word could be translated virtue, or as a definition of character, intrinsic excellence. Intrinsic excellence. And when the apostle lists all these good things, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, honest, pure, lovely, of good report, if there be any intrinsic excellence, if there be any character, if there be any virtue, these are the things to think about. Another Greek word, dokime, is in Romans 5:3. And not only does this focus in on character for us, but it also starts to give us a hint as to how we get it. Romans 5:3 from the New American Standard. And not only this, but we also exalt or appreciate our experiences, knowing that tribulation brings about perseverance, and perseverance brings about proven character. The third Greek word is in Hebrews 13:5. And this Greek word is tropos. And King James, rather weakly, says, let your conversation be without covetousness. Oh, that's just scratching the surface. What the Greek word here means is, let your character be free from the love of money. Do you see the difference? I mean, let your covetousness be free from the love of money. Okay, that's one thing. But let your character, oh, that means everything about you. That gets down deep. And that's what character is. It's who you are on the inside. Deep inside. I have 10 suggestions as to how do we get closer to where we want to be in regards to character. Number one is you have to know the definition of character. And because the word is a broad concept, I think that each one of us must have our own personal definition. I have kind of solidified in my mind that character is the internal values or qualities that determine all your behaviors. That's the one I've developed as my favorite. You need to have something that works for you. Some definition of what character is that talks about these qualities that are deep inside you. Ronald Reagan said, you can tell a man's character by the way he eats jelly beans. Now, I guess as he sat there in the White House, he would see that one person would pick out the black jelly beans, another person would pick out the red jelly beans, whatever. That definition worked for him. We all need a working definition. You must know, you must understand what character is before you can do anything about it. And if you think back to our welcome address, there were 3 points made as to how we become acceptable to God. And the first one was that we had to understand. Then we had to have skills to do things. And thirdly, we had to have a passion to do them. And as we go through our 10 lists, our 10 things here, some of these have to do with understanding, and then some have to do with skills. So the first thing is you have to have your own definition of character. What is character? It should be crystal clear in your mind. Number two, it's helpful to be aware of the subcategories, the scriptural subcategories of character. I'm going to list scripture and then a subcategory of character. Philippians 2:15, be blameless and harmless. Isaiah 57:15, be contrite. Acts 22:12, devout. 2 Peter 2:9, godly. John 1:47, no guile. You see how these are all subsets of a person's character. Colossians 3:12 has several. Merciful, kind, meek, long-suffering. 1 Peter 5:5, humility. Romans 8:14, being led by the Spirit. 1 Thessalonians 4:9, brotherly love. Romans 16:19, obedient. Luke 1:6, righteous. 2 Corinthians 2:17, sincere. Acts 2:42, steadfast. Psalm 119:1, undefiled. This is a long list. Let me give you a little workbook, a little Bible student aid that talks a lot about all these subcategories of character. It's the manna. Day after day, we get definitions that are the subcategories of character. The third suggestion is to repetitiously read the accounts of Jesus' life. Repetitiously read the accounts of Jesus' life. This means read the gospel accounts over and over and over again. Read them in the King James. Read them in the New American. Read them in the NIV, read them in the Jerusalem Bible, just keep reading them over and over again. Get so familiar with Jesus' day-to-day life that you'll see what his character was. And get away from some of the stereotypes. You know, sometimes Jesus got angry. What did that have to do with his character? Well, look into that. There's a statement there. Sometimes he rebuked people. He spent a lot of time with children. What did that have to do? What did that tell you about character? He spent a lot of time with outcasts. Sometimes he wept. He asked questions. Sometimes he avoided people. These all have to do with his character. If you collect those stories and accounts, you will get a composite of the kind of character you want to be. Number four gets more personal. Focus on your particular need. Focus on your primary need. You know, two of our biggest enemies are denial and rationalization. You know, I'm a pretty patient guy. Right. Philippians 3:13 gives us a good suggestion. The apostle says, this one thing I do. So my suggestion here is, if you try to just say, I'm going to improve my character, let me tell you, you're not going to get anything done. But if you will pick out one or two things, you know better than anybody, except your spouse, of course, what you could use for improvement. And I'm suggesting that out of the list of things, pick something for this year. I suggest putting it in the manna. 1997. Whatever it is. Make that your commitment. Maybe it should be a bookmark so you can move it through the manna each day. Maybe you should put it in code so your spouse doesn't know what it is. It's okay. But you have to write it down. You have to focus on one thing at a time. Number five. Stop being superficial. Stop acting. Stop putting on one face for this group, another face for this group. When you talk to this brother doing one thing, acting, playing some kind of role, just going through some kind of routine, that's not really you. It's better if you're really you. In your conversation, in your study, in your fellowship, in your witnessing, in your service, and in your love. You know, there's such a thing as character actors. They have them in Hollywood. That's not what we're talking about. We're not supposed to be character actors. We're supposed to have character. Number six, avoid prominent positions. There's no good way you can develop character as a prominent person. You get very little progress if you're on committees, if you're on boards, if you're the chairman of the ecclesia, if you're the trustee, director, president. Now, I know when you're on those committees, you get static. I know, first of all, it's a lot of work, and then secondly, you get static. You get some criticism. But that's more than outbalanced by the adulation you get for your position and the deference that brethren show you. And when you take the static and balance it with all the adulation you get, There's nothing left there for character development. It's no way to develop character. Matthew 6:22 talked about the actors in the synagogues and in the streets. Jesus said they did it that they could have the glory of men. We have glory positions in our fellowship. And what did Jesus say? He says they have their reward. You know, if prominence developed character, Bill Clinton would have the best character of all, because he's a prominent guy. But it doesn't work that way. There's an old saying in the world, power corrupts. It's not talking about corrupting the way you look. It's not talking about corrupting your face or your body. You know what they're talking about? You know what this old saying is talking about? It's saying it corrupts your character. Yeah. That's old wisdom from the world. Prominence corrupts. Corrupts character. So beware of the glory of men, because it may be the only reward you get. Number 7, and I was glad to hear this mentioned a couple times during the convention, work on today. Work on your character today. Not on tomorrow's character, and not on yesterday's character. 2 Peter 1:12 uses the expression that we need to be established in the present truth. And I'm going to change that a little bit, that says we need to be established in the present character. You know, some people live in the past. They remember the things of the past. They remember the hurts of the past, the injuries of the past. And some people live in the future. They're anxious about what's going to happen. They're fearful what's going to happen tomorrow. And you'll never develop any character this way. If you want to be patient today. If you want to start working on patience, you have to do it during this talk. If there's something else that you're developing on, do it today. If you're going to be honest, today. Don't think about being honest next week. Next week you can be honest that day. And if you keep getting the same lessons day after day, well, you're probably not paying attention. So, present character. Now, number 8 is, you can't do it academically. Matthew 6:27, which of you, by taking thought, can add 1 cubit unto his stature? You can't really develop character by thinking about it. You're going to have to do things. That's why Jesus said in John 13:14, wash one another's feet. That's a service function. It also took a lot of humility. It took character. So we have to do things, and we actually have to do things more than we're used to doing. You always have to extend yourself another step if you're going to grow. You know, you don't develop muscles by just lifting a fork all the time. You have to, if you want to develop muscles, you've got to lift some weights. You're not going to develop mental capabilities by reading the same material over and over again. You have to increase the degree of difficulty. You have to increase your capabilities. Number 9, as far as developing character, has to do with growth experiences. And there are two kinds of growth experiences. Romans 5:3 talked about the tribulation leads to proven character. And we talk a lot about how our experiences help us develop. We have a rough experience, it develops us. But there are two kinds of experiences. There are the big ones. I would call them the earthquakes of our lives, the cataclysms, the big trials. I'm talking about class divisions. I'm talking about the loss of a loved one. I'm talking about a bitter personal attack from somebody in your class. Those are big trials. But you know, don't overestimate the value of those experiences. Don't overestimate them. They happen, but don't nurture them and hold them in your memory. Because think of a sculptor working on a large piece of marble. There are times when he hits that marble and knocks off huge chunks of stone. Like these big trials, these big bitter experiences. But that's not what gives the sculpture its definition and beauty. What gives the sculpture its beauty is the hundreds, the thousands, maybe the millions of tiny, tiny strokes of the sculptor. So this is a second kind of chiseling. This is a second kind of growth experience. Let me read this, which most of us see in the Most Holy Faith book on page 541, called Common Days. One of the chief dangers of life is trusting occasions. We think that conspicuous events, striking experiences, exalted moments have most to do with our character and capacity. We are wrong. Common days, monotonous hours, wearisome paths, plain old tools, and everyday clothes tell the real story. Good habits are not made on birthdays, nor Christian character at the new year. The vision may dawn, the dream may waken, the heart may leap with a new inspiration on some mountaintop. But the test, the triumph, is at the foot of the mountain, on the level plain. The workshop of character is everyday life. The uneventful and commonplace hour is where the battle is won or lost. So there's two kinds of growth experiences. There are the big ones, and there are the common, everyday, tiny, tiny chiselings and shapings. And it's those daily experiences that are going to make you a beautiful character. Number 10. For us to grow our character and develop it, we have to change our reactions to our experiences. We have to change our reactions to our experiences. We cannot react the same way like we used to. Okay, let's talk about criticism. Everybody gets criticized. You're going to get criticized. If you do anything, you're going to get criticized. If you don't do anything, you're going to get criticized. You have to change the way you react to criticism. You can't react to criticism the same way you did when you were a little kid. If you're going to develop character, you have to change the way you react. You have to change the way you react to injury, to slander, to gossip, when people speak evil of your good works. You actually have to change the way you react to those experiences. That's how you're going to develop character. All these things are a risk. You have to risk some things. You have to risk being comfortable to go and do these things. There was a man in Matthew 25:25 who didn't want to take any risks. So he said, "You know, I took the talent you gave me and I hid it in the earth." That's a mistake. And this is where the third part of the welcome address came in. And that was passion. If you want to be part of the 144,000, you have to have a passion for changing your character. How important is this character? Knowledge is going to pass away. Old works will be but a memory, but character is for eternity. Why does the vision tarry? Let me give you another angle. Let me give you a behavioral approach as to why the vision tarries. The behavioral answer is the 144,000 has not been completed. That's why the next step can't take place. 144,000 worthy have not been found yet. Now, we all know God has a timetable. Okay? That's why I call this behavioral approach at this. But if they already had found 144,000 faithful, oh, the kingdom could start. It could. Can it be tarrying? Possibly. Because the development of character in what's left has slowed down to just a crawl? Is there so little salt left on the earth that the vision is tarrying? Is there so little spirit left? Is there so little consecration left to fill up these last members? How many spaces are left? This has been a memorable week. And I want to tell you that for my father, for myself, and for Dawn, it's been a beautiful week. It's been a pivotal week. It's like a week where we turned a corner and something's very different than it was before. And your expressions of love to us have made this a week we will never forget. But what is in our hearts and minds is that, oh, the vision may tarry, brethren, but how much time do you have? How much time do I have? Whatever else you are doing with your life, brethren, whatever else you are doing with your life, make certain that you are crystallizing, transforming, developing, improving your innermost qualities, your character.